Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition of At the Devil's Ball, the podcast where we talk about horror and genre films in a positive and constructive manner. I am Nathaniel.
And I'm Samuel.
And we are continuing Vampire Month with Let the Right One In, the Swedish, it is Swedish, correct?
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, the Swedish film, vampire film. And we have us, we have filmmaker Jamie Alvey joining us again.
I'm never going to get used to the filmmaker title, I swear, as long as I live. Because every time I'm like, oh, y'all think I'm really, I'm special or something. But thank you. Yes, it's always great to be here.
Good. Well, I'm glad we're glad to have you. Yep. And you're driving.
Well, not right at the moment, but we're stopped right now because Emily's had to run and get some stuff for her nephew's, you know, last minute aunt things. And I'm just chilling out here in the car.
Okay. Well, I'm just putting that out there just in case something goes wrong. you are in fact in a vehicle, traveling someplace. So
I am.
Yeah. So Sam, do you want to go ahead and do the vitals on this one? Can you handle these names or?
God help me. I'm gonna try at least, but no promises. Let the Right One In was released on December 12th, 2008. It was written by John Edgvid Lindqvist, who also wrote the book it was based upon. Directed by Thomas Alfredson, and it stars Kerr Haldebrandt, Lena Leanderson, Per Ragnar, Henrik Dahl, Karen Barkvist, Peter Carlberg, Ika Nord, Mikael Ram, Carl Robert Lindgren, Anders T. Pidu, Pale Olofsson, Kento Ruiz, Patrick Rydmark, and Johan Charles. I think that's most of the cast.
That's
a lot of them
good.
don't have pictures or names that I recognize, so it's hard to say.
Yep, that's pretty good. Those are pretty good with those names. Yeah. And so before we get started, because obviously this movie is going to be talking, we're going to be delving into gender here.
Definitely.
And, can we all agree to just to use she, her pronouns for the character of Ellie for the sake of brevity? Is that okay with everybody?
Yeah, I think that's what was intended.
Yeah, I always do because she seems to identify with that.
Well, she does say a couple times she's not a girl.
Yeah, that she's not a girl. Like, and
so I was just wanted to be like, as I guess in the novel, and there is some statement of, there's that one shot too of the stitch job, which imply that that something's going on there gender wise that isn't, that she's definitely not a female, but since she's a fictional character and there's no one to offend in that respect, I figured for the sake of simplicity, we can just utilize those pronouns. The actor is female. But obviously it's an important aspect of this narrative. But she's
referred to as she in the novel also.
Well, that works. And so, yeah, we've got, it's an interesting little film. Sam, you're the one who picked this one.
Right.
This was on one of your picks. So why don't you talk us through what was going through your mind when you chose Let the Right One In for... In fact, there's a reason why we did this, if memory serves. Because you
what
were talking...
We were talking about it.
Oh, no. You were talking about bad CGI cats at one point. And then you were like, Let the Right One In.
Yes.
And then it was like, once you said it on social media, I was like, so we're doing that in next month. And you were like, yeah, actually, let's do Vampires Part 2. And I was like, okay, let's do it. But other than CGI cats, what about this
film? Other than CGI cats, which, you know, this is probably one of the worst CGI cats, you know, sequences in modern history. But that's fine because the rest of the movie is freaking wonderful.
Agreed.
It's one of my favorite vampire films. and one of my favorite, like, you know, like feel bad middle school films.
Yes. Oh my God.
And it just really, it really captures the essence of being like, you know, an outcast in middle school and not knowing your place and not having anything to rely on, in that really tentative age that that is. So yeah, I just love everything about this movie. And the way it approaches vampires is, you know, is interesting. It's kind of, it plays by the rules, but it's also kind of unique, and like they're more animalistic when they're in vampire mode. And so yes,
Well,
it's just a lot of fun. This is a great vampire film and a great coming of age story and a great movie about, you know, love and gender and all that kind of stuff that you're trying to figure out when you're that age.
I'm not sure how love it is, but
We'll get into that
but
because
we'll get
it's
into it.
yeah.
But then when we mentioned it on social media, I think Emily jumped on and said, "You guys have to, you have to invite Jamie for Let the Right One In." So why is that, Jamie? Why is this movie so important to you?
I actually watched this movie all the way back in 2009, so I was still pretty young when it came out, and so I wasn't much older than they were in that movie when I watched it. And like, you know, just coming from a really bullied, awful background in school, I immediately identified with the characters in that, and that movie has just been such a huge part in just shaping me artistically and as a storyteller. And like, it has just so much resonance for me personally and artistically. So it's a movie that I don't stop talking about when I get started.
Right. Sure.
Yeah. And I remember, like, I was like, hey, I want to watch this movie, and I want to watch it with and my dad was like, okay, and he bought me the DVD and we watched it together, and he loved it. And like, if you mention it to him, he's like, yes, perfect movie, wonderful, 10 out of 10, even with the cat.
Right.
So
I would argue that the movie's one real misstep is those cats, but yeah, I mean, it's the it is that one moment in the film that suddenly it just is laugh out loud funny. And you know, the I would be able to forgive it if it was just a CGI cat hissing. But they just swarm this woman and she's like flailing about with these CGI cats so that she like falls down the
Yeah, and it's
stairs. It's
supposed to
like
be
a
her.
Benny
It's
Hill
supposed to be
sketch.
her a
Yeah.
horrific scene, and it's just it
It's very
doesn't
Monty
work. They
Python.
tried
Yeah.
their best, but it didn't work.
Yeah. It feels very Monty Python. And you know, and it is the only real, I think it is probably the only real misstep. I do think the subplot of the woman getting turned into a vampire does send a drag a little, but it takes very little time. So it's kind of like this is okay. And it's necessary. It's what leads, you know, to the direct conflict of the narrative. You know, something is gonna have to drive Ellie away, or Ellie away. And so all that's necessary narratively. But that's I think really is the only thing that doesn't quite work. Everything else about this film is pretty much perfect. It's a really extraordinary piece. And yeah, I guess why don't we dive into the heavy stuff? Let's start with like I said earlier, when Sam's saying it's a movie about love and coming of age. And I don't know if I agree. And that's the main question I wanted to offer to both of you. How genuine is Ellie's relationship with Oscar? Because we open this film with Ellie has her companion, or servant, I guess is probably more accurate. And that relationship is soured, and she's like yelling at him. And when she speaks to him, and as Sam also mentioned, like the vampire is sort of unique here in that it's almost wholly inhuman, which is my favorite thing about it, is I love the idea of the vampire being inhuman. Not in the sense of like, you know, right now Starship Troopers is in the discourse of, you know, with the bugs and everything about the dehumanization of the other, but the right. vampire as other that is equal or greater than human, fascinates me. But that's another topic for a little bit later. In this case, though, Ely has this servant that she's basically kind of now mistreating and sort of right. carelessly casts away at the end of that, mm-hmm. when he's taken out. It's probably the end of the first act, that it seems pretty clear that Ely is looking to make Oscar the new one, the replacement. Right. However, there are moments in this narrative that suggest that Ely might actually feel something for Oscar. But at the same time, I'm not entirely sure I believe it. And so I guess right. that's my question to you is how genuine is this? How much of this movie is manipulation, mm-hmm. both of Oscar and of the audience? Or do you believe it is genuine? Is it is she really caring for this boy?
I think she really cares for Oscar, but at the same time, it's going to be a toxic relationship. It's going to be, you know, it's because she doesn't know how to not use people in this manner.
Well, I also kind of want to add some context too, because mm-hmm. her companion in this is mm-hmm. he's actually legitimately a pedophile, and right. that's why she's taking advantage of him. Because he is a pedophile.
Right.
And honestly, I have no sympathy for him and her manipulation of him. Like, I feel like she's justified in it. Like, if he's going to be that much of a creep, right. use him. But I also really do think that with Oscar, it's the first time that she's kind of experienced something that didn't hinge on, you know, some sort of growth reciprocity.
Right.
So to speak. So I think that it is almost healing for her to have experienced this with Oscar, because it's obvious this is all new. Like, she's very old at this point, but right. like, she's experiencing like actual first love alongside with him, and it's really touching, and I do think it's genuine. And if you want to know what the writer thinks, mm-hmm. he thinks so as well, because he actually followed up the novel with a short story called Let the Old Dreams Die, and it pretty much is like, where are they now? And like, Ellie and Oscar are like very happy and both vampires now, I think, in it.
Okay. Well, yeah. That's useful. Right. Sure. In this yeah. case, to add the context of author intention.
I do see that like people be like, oh, is she manipulating him? Is this because right. a lot of people wondered if that was what she was doing, was replacing him. And I think that she, in a way, she kind of is replacing him, but she's like trading something that's
bad for something better. Yeah.
Yeah, like she's actually starting to experience like a genuine connection. And like, there's implications that she has been sexually abused even before she was ever a vampire.
Right.
So there's a lot of trauma there, and like, learning to trust somebody and actually try to heal that, like, you're gonna have to like work through a lot of your own issues and to even get to that point. So it's very interesting. And honestly, I think Let the Right One In is one of the greatest love stories ever put to screen. I've always thought that it was just like achingly romantic in mm-hmm. such a pure way.
Huh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Right.
Because I would. Was not the read I took from it, which is what always interests me when someone has a more hopeful read of something that I felt to be very pessimistic. But,
Well, this is a very bleak film, so I mean, reading it and reading it pessimistically is, is not an invalid read, I don't think. It's just as like, and I think I'm kind of in the middle where it's like, I think they do have feelings for each other, and but they're both so damaged that I don't know how it's gonna work out.
Because
I
yeah, the
think
way
that.
I the way I read it was Ely as a totally predatory creature, to the point of when we hear the true voice, it doesn't even sound human. We see its true face; it barely looks human. And there are these moments in which this wonderful performance by this young lady, Lena Linderson, are is I do think that I did read it as there was some genuine emotion going involved there, but I looked at it as more as a means to an end. I looked at it as like I need a new helper, and where it gets complicated, where Ely becomes a complicated character, is the idea that Oscar is reminding her of something she used to know, and is it and is also realizing like I'm trying to think of a good example in another piece of fiction, but like Lost, for example, does have a bit where we discover that this woman has basically been manipulating her son to his death because she has to, because that's how like time travel works, and so there's this complicated relationship in which she genuinely loves her son but is also sending him to die because that's what must happen. That's what I kept kind of reading from a lot of those moments from Ely was, I have to do this. I don't have to like it though. But I so I mean, but it's so it's interesting to me to hear a more optimistic viewpoint that all of this is genuine, because it really did strike me as a predatory, an apex predator, kind of manipulating prey, but realizing that this prey has to be handled a little bit more delicately. And then discovering it's not as easy to manipulate prey that you kind of care about. But yeah, I mean, there is I think to support it, there is a level of trying to think of the right word. The worth of a human life is relative in Let the Right One In. Ely is killing people to maintain existence, as all vampires are. But the narrative is focusing, of course, on this vampire having these more complicated emotional responses. But ultimately, what we are still talking about is everybody exists within a world in which their function is what their worth is what their worth to Ely is, if that makes sense. That's a terrible sentence, but and so I think that, but that's what I kept kind of looking at, as like this, as you put it, Sam, it's a very bleak movie, and I was like, well, this is also because Oscar is not exactly a healthy character. And he
No.
doesn't end up a healthy character. And I always read the ending of the movie to be, well, we're irreparably damaged now. We're never going to get better. I do love that. I do think it's great that there's a short story in which they're a happy vampire couple. I think that's fantastic. And I'm rooting for these kids. I am,
Yeah,
but you
the author of he writes a lot of horror and like dark fantasy and stuff, and like a lot of it does kind of veer like in places more hopeful. I've not gotten around to watching or reading it, but there's one that's called Border that's supposed to be fantastic that's based off of his work. And it's kind of more hopeful, and it also deals with gender in a really interesting way. But I think that he just kind of like, I don't know. I think his approach to Ellie is that this is someone that has been very hurt, and the kind of someone that's having to unlearn so much of the world and what they know about themselves and the people around them in order to allow yourself to feel again. And it's really scary, especially when you've kind of closed yourself off from like love and romantic feelings and stuff like that, because inevitably you do meet people that remind you that you're not as closed off to that as you thought you were. And I think that really takes her by surprise and kind of reminds her that there is something human in me.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And yeah, and I'm not disputing that. I was just mostly talking about my read on the narrative. But yeah, the but no, I think you're right. And I think in even in any read, I think that there is some truth in the sense that Illy is feeling something. But yeah, Sam, where are you on that? What was your take with a take on it, without any further context?
On what?
Without any further, what was your take on that relationship?
Oh, it's just I think that they're, you know, both incredibly damaged people. You know, Oscar is a budding psychopath, and Illy is, I guess, a budded psychopath, where she's already, you know, gone into her, you know, fully, but she's kind of pulling back from that and, you know, feeling human feelings again for the first time in, you know, maybe ever. So I think that, you know, this, they do both have, you know, genuine feelings for each other, but I don't know if they know what to do with that, or, you know, if they can, you know, do something positive with that, because they're just so broken. I don't know. I know that Oscar is, you know, trying to find himself and trying to find, you know, the will to fight back, and, you know, she gives him, you know, some tips in that and gives him the confidence to be able to fight back. Pardon me, I have to cough for a second. Excuse me. Still have this cold that I can't get rid of. But, you know, so he learns to fight back, you know, from her, and, you know, he starts to gain a little bit of confidence. You can see it in the way the actor holds himself in different scenes, you know, where he's, you know, just kind of slouched over, you know, don't look at me, don't notice me kind of thing. And then as the film progresses, he kind of comes out of that a little bit, at least around her. And then he stands up to the bullies in that one, you know, wonderful scene where they're in the, on the iced over lake.
Yeah, he whacks him in the ear. Yeah.
Right. And splits his ear open. But, you know, the way he's holding himself there, he's confident for the first time. He, you know, feels something, you know, that he's worth fighting for himself for the first time. And I think that's important. I think that's, you know, that's real. And for Illy to feel confident around him, to express, you know, humanity for the first time in a long time, you know, is real as well. So I think there's, these kids got a lot of feelings going for each other. And, you know, it may have started off with her thinking that, you know, she can, you know, use him to be the next familiar. I'm not sure 100% on that, but obviously that's where the relationship is headed, at least in the text of the film just by itself.
Right.
So yeah, I don't think she's, you know, using him entirely. I think she's, you know, may have started off that way. It may have started off that way, but it's turned into something different.
Okay. I mean, partially, I do admit I'm clinging to my, I cling to my read because I really do want the vampire story in which the vampire is wholly inhuman, because that is what's always fascinated me about vampire fiction, is the idea of something else, non-human, similar to like how like, mutants are treated in like Marvel Comics, like, you know, the idea of like, you've got something else. that may even be better than humanity, but what does that exactly look like? And both this movie and Interview with the Vampire both were, I think, great examples of a humanoid predator, right. You know, that stalks prey. And there's this connection to sort of the animalistic world of, you know, like the way she climbs up trees, the way she, you know, she dives on top of prey. You know, the scurrying about, you know, when she's desperate, she has that frightened animal look in her eyes. Like, it's all, or little things like a wonderful moment. Like, they go into the basement before they turn on the light and her eyes glow right. in the dark, like a cat's. Those things like that are what really fascinate me. And so, yeah, I mean, I do track the, you know, the predator kind of being like, oh, this is what humanity feels like. I kind of forgot about that.
Right.
But, you know, it just fascinates me to the idea of having this wholly inhuman creature, monster running around doing things. Has always been what fascinates me about vampire fiction. And this movie, I think, nails that feel.
Right.
I'm not sure that movie exists yet, though. Maybe it's because you can't make a character out of it. I don't know, but
yeah, it doesn't really. It's hard to get compelling drama out of that if there's no humanity left. In the thing.
Yeah.
I guess I mean, 30 Days a Night. You know, were pretty animalistic.
That's where I was going because I think it walked that line because you get to see vampires with humanity and you get to see vampires without it. So right. I think that might be one of the closest ones that I can think of.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that, but they kind of, they feel like pleasure. It's like, that's like, there's like a thing with them, but right. No, I mean, maybe what I'm thinking of isn't exactly even doable, but I feel like in terms of the otherworldly feel of inhumanity, existing within a human space, let the right one in is as close right. as I think we're going to get. And so I dig that about the film. What do we make of the stitch job, the scar tissue in the with Elise, when he looks into the room, he sees her naked. What are we looking at exactly? What are you guys, what are we inferring from Ely's backstory? What do you guys think?
So there's two possible ways that I could see. Either she is a eunuch, she has been castrated, or she has undergone female genital mutilation. Either one is not great. And obviously, her perception of herself and her gender has changed over the years because of it.
Right. Sure. Okay.
Yep.
Yep. And yep. That would color why she tells Oscar at least twice, I'm not a girl, right. which is both of them.
There's also the read of that line that's like she's also inferring that she's not a girl because she's not human.
Right. I'm not
at human. All.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what kind of what I was getting at is do we think it's an identification of gender or is it an identification of humanity? Like where is
I believe in the book it was, you know, she was castrated at the same time she was turned into a vampire. But you know, setting the book aside, just you know, watching in that scene, it shows that she's, you know, been heavily abused. And she's, you know, got the scars to show it, you know, unfortunately. And that when she says, you know, she's no longer, you know, she's not a girl, like there's something physical about that as well. Whether it's that like you said, Jamie, you know, it's female genital mutilation or she's been castrated. Either way, it's something that she's had to, you know, go through, and you know, it's not good.
Right. And that's why she tells Oscar, like, when Oscar asks if he's got a chance with her, that scene.
Right.
I read it not knowing the book,
Mm-hmm.
right? And even I think that's before the showing of that scar tissue that
Right.
that I was like that again. I was looking at it from the sense of manipulation to a degree, but if that is the case, then that would mean that scene is both us having a physical connection is impossible because of my body, but
Right.
also because I'm not human. Is that
Yeah,
right?
and
What you
yeah.
And I also think because it's kind of obvious that she's been used for her body. She's been sexualized. So I kind of think that she sees like a romance impossible without that aspect. Like she's like, I'm just always going to be a sex object to these men,
Right.
to these boys. So
Right.
I think that comes from a place of trauma for her. And like when she finds someone that loves her for who she is, and it's like, yeah, sex or not, like I
Right.
love you, I want to be with you. It, again, that's scary. That's scary. That's really scary.
Very true. Yeah. No, from your perspective, dude, from what you're talking about, Jamie, it's almost that this story is more of a horror story for Ely than it is for anybody else.
I mean, it is for, yeah.
Yeah, like I think it's easy. I guess maybe it is. It's a perspective I hadn't considered because I mean I've been viewing this film from the perspective of Oscar,
Right.
and so now I'm having that challenge, and now it's making my brain go. So I'm like, oh, okay, this is getting entirely recontextualized in my head.
I think having grown up with it kind of helps with that because I feel like at that age, I heavily identified with Oscar, but I think the older I get, the more I identify with her.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I mean. It's interesting that it never even a kind of it didn't really occur to me to identify with her. And instead looking at the narrative entirely as because and in some way in many ways it is Oscar's story. But what Jamie we were kind of going with and what I'm now kind of learning is that actually but all the subtext is Ely.
Right.
Like it's her story just as much as his, if not more so, because what's going on under the surface is affecting her and her growth, which is fascinating, because I was thinking about it from the sense of from Oscar's perspective and pretty much only Oscar's perspective,
Right.
huh?
There's such just one wonderful thematic parallels to one another. Yeah.
That's
I
really interesting.
always saw them as like two halves of a whole. They're like one story can't really progress without the others. And they're both so dependent on each other's development and growth within the story.
Yeah, for sure. Because yeah, he can't he's not getting anywhere without her. It's his relationship with her that, as Sam pointed out, causes him to create more confidence and create more. But also at the end of the day, like he
Right.
requires her to save him.
Yeah.
And she comes back for him. But that's what I mean is when I was reading it and reading it entirely from Oscar's perspective and reading it as Ely as predatory, I read that ending sequence as more or less like it was just the last bit of gaslighting. Like she's like, I'm leaving, and then I'll come back and save you, and now you're with me. But no, now that you but once we're connecting that tissue, then we suddenly have, a she can't be without him,
Right.
because it was the only way that she grew as a person was through this
Yep.
relationship with him,
Yep.
and that his fascination with her vampiric nature is less about a certain morbid curiosity and more about a genuine desire to know her.
Right. Yeah. And
Yeah.
it's scary to have somebody see you, like see parts of you like that. And then you're just like, you're not scared of me. You don't think I'm quote unquote crazy. You don't right. think that I'm gross, that I'm disgusting. And you still want me? I right. feel like she's kind of like okay, he's not all there.
Mm-hmm.
But mm. yeah, she's just not, but it works. It works because that's our other half.
Right.
Right.
Well, I mean, he can yeah.
Yeah, he can meet her on her level, and I don't think she's ever been met on her level before.
No, and it would imply that any human interaction she has had would have ended up the way it did with the locals. The inevitable attempt to kill her, yes. because she is in fact because she's a monster. But I mean, Oscar's not all there though. Which is part of it as well, is that you do have a Mickey and Mallory thing going on, like, you know, a couple of crazy people getting together.
Hey, I love the couple that kills together, stays together kind of trope.
Sure.
That's my bread and butter, and it will be from here on out until I die.
Okay.
And I love them. I love them together, and I love that they actually do provide positive growth in one another and support in this very complicated and oftentimes morally gray narrative framework.
Right, we are talking about two people that are going to kill a lot of people.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. And some of them may not deserve it. And in fact, most of the characters in Let the Right One In that do die probably don't deserve it.
No.
So it's, you know, their worst sin really is that they're a bunch of hicks, you know.
I also think about her having, like, a guy that goes and kills for her. It kind of makes you think that she almost doesn't have a taste for it to an extent.
I always looked at, I mean, that's a way yeah. to look at it. I always looked at it as it was yeah. just too risky.
Right. That's kind of how I interpreted it as well, that it's, you know, it's a bigger risk on her, and it's a bigger risk of creating vampires. And, you know, she yeah. doesn't really want to do that, it seems.
But yeah. that also shows that she also has some sense of humanity there, because, like, you had vampire, like, just vampires out of control, that too would be catastrophic to human right. life. So really, yeah. regardless, it just feels like she's trying to do some sort of harm reduction.
Oh, right. She certainly is. I mean, the first time she meets Oscar, the implication she's starving. And she doesn't right. kill him. He gives her the Rubik's cube, and they mm-hmm. have their meet cute. And then he says, "Well, see you later." And she doubles over in pain.
Right.
She's like, yep. I actually just spent that whole conversation thinking about how much I really want to eat him. And mm-hmm. I didn't eat him. But she also does reveal that she'd been watching him for some time, which is why I was like, well, maybe he's like, well, he's the one. My current familiar is fucking up. So this kid's good. But at the same time, there certainly does seem to be a reluctance on her part to. I think it's going back. Actually, the more I think about it, the more it's going back to what you're talking about, Jamie, about being seen.
Right.
Being visible as what you are, that I think maybe it's a shame thing. I mean, like, she doesn't want to be seen doing the things she does. She has these those moments with Oscar where, you know, he cuts his hand and she's trying really hard not to do it. And then she licks the blood up right. off the ground rather than harm him. But she's horrified that he sees her and says, "Now go away." Like, she doesn't want to be perceived as a vampire.
Right.
And so maybe that goes into it too, that just like the idea of visibility brings her shame. You know, she even talks about, like, she has all this money,
mm-hmm.
but she doesn't want to use it. And it's yeah. like, well, would that be, is that because it brings you attention? And is that bad for survival, or is that just because you don't want to be perceived? Mm-hmm. And so that the more that Oscar sees her, the more comfortable she feels going out into the world. Because she does take off in a cab on her own,
right?
At the end of this movie. So, yeah, maybe there is something about the something to that idea for sure that she has. So I love doing this show. Suddenly, I rethink entire films in the middle of conversations. But yeah, this is all about Eli becoming comfortable with her own body,
right,
and her own identity. Even as Oscar gains confidence and strength, he is still the window in which the mirror in which she's able to come to terms with her own identity.
Right.
And that's really something. And now I feel remarkably stupid because I was watching this movie and I didn't see this. So interesting. My narrow-minded view of vampires got in the way of a more beautiful story about identity and life itself.
But think about it. We bring our own experiences to a movie and anything that we consume or read, and that affects our read of it sometimes like that. So
for sure. And I mean, like I said, most of this movie I was viewing through the eyes of Oscar, and because as Sam mentioned at the very beginning, you know, growing up bullied, a lot of Oscar's experiences do jive with the young male experience. If you are, unlucky enough to not be on the to be the bullied, you know, I never stabbed a tree with a knife pretending I was stabbing anybody. But I bet you did. But
yeah,
but it seems like something that, you know. Not that I would never have a revenge fantasy. Those I did have, but I never thought about real violence in the sense of stabbing anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, revenge, the fantasy of the revenge of standing up to the bullies and giving them what for is an experience. But also, you know, like meeting the wrong person and ending up in you know, ending up in a relationship that's ultimately going to just make it worse. You know, it's a new form of bullying. It's just one that looks benevolent. And so I think that's where that read was coming from, was that ultimately Oscar is a victim. Right. And it never really occurred to me that maybe Oscar and Eli were both actually healing experiences for one another rather than Oscar is a perennial victim. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah, because I was reading the film being like, Oscar is just a victim who's going in that ultimately the end of the movie is like, well, I just threw away my life to be this vampire's familiar rather than get better. What is weird, I think what's weird about Oscar's experience, though, and I'll put this to you guys, is what we make of the parents in this film, because we've got that interesting little scene. I'm assuming it's his dad's lover is in the house.
How I always read that.
And it's this awkward attempt to, I guess, introduce them. And then, but we get very little mom, but mom seems to be at work a lot. What is your guys' read on that? Like, is it, is there something more going on there, or what is it you guys think?
Well, they both, you know, love him and, seem to care about him, and but they just don't know what to do with him, especially the dad. You know, it's just like, you know, okay, well, we're gonna have a good day together and, you know, play games and ride on death machines and you know, have a good time. And then, you know, his friend or his lover or whatever comes over, and, you know, he's just like forgets how to like interact with his son anymore. And the mom's kind of the same way, like, you know, where she's, you could tell she cares about him and, you know, loves him, but like doesn't know how to interact with him really, as a, on a person to person level.
Well, I like that. The thing that I noticed, Keaton knows, is Oscar comes home after being away for whatever, a couple of days, I guess.
Right.
And his mother's like on the phone and she's like, now you're going to talk to your father. And it's clear from Oscar's, the look on Oscar's face that his father is not particularly concerned.
Right.
And therefore we get that impression that, you know, at the same time, Oscar's broken home life is not just because it's broken, but because his parents aren't infusing him with particularly good values.
Right.
Dad is clearly a pushover. Dad doesn't want to get involved in the discipline, and his mother is trying to discipline him, but isn't getting that support. But yeah, it's an interesting aspect of Oscar's. And I don't know if you guys think it like has a greater weight to the narrative or if there's a connection there to be made, but.
Like how so? What do you mean?
I don't know. I'm kind of I'm kind of asking you guys. I mean, like, it's part of the narrative.
Right.
Is it just, is there a connection between him and between his parents and, apparently I didn't, is the pedophile thing established in the picture? I didn't notice anything.
No, not really. It's implied.
Heavily, it's implied, but they right. don't, it's more subtext in the movie. Right. It is like text in the book.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
He was like a school teacher or something in the book, I believe.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
But yeah, it's you just kind of have to pick up on it from, like, you know, the fact that he keeps choosing these young boys as his victims.
Yep.
Right.
In the book, in the movie.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but yeah, I was wondering about the, but I was just wondering if there was some sort of connective tissue in your guys' mind about, like, the pedophile and the adults in Oscar's life, but other than adults are useless.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's just that the adults aren't present in his life. You know, it's they're not really adding anything to it, and they're not really, you know, seeing what he's going through. I think his mother, you know, infantilizes him, and his father just doesn't know how to react to him in general.
His father's raising a drinking buddy. So
yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty much.
I mean, yeah. I don't know how to relate to him, yeah.
Right.
It's really kind of like in both cases with Ellie and Oscar is there is a wall between them and the adult figures in their lives, and like they don't really understand them. There is a disconnect. What I would say more with Oscar is the fact that his parents do seem to love him, but they neglect it.
Yeah.
He's neglected. He's a kid that's kind of got caught in the middle of a divorce, and he's just there.
Right.
Like they don't know. Like again, they don't know what to do with him. And then Ellie is just. It's kind of almost the opposite because the guy's just, he's just there.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't really know what to do with him. So we've got some mirrors there in that nobody understands anybody and no one knows what to do with the other person in the situation. And,
right.
Like I think that disconnect really is part of why one, it was so easy for Ellie to kill him, and two, why it was so easy for Oscar to just leave with her.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
Well, Oscar clearly doesn't feel comfortable. Yeah. There's something to be said. I like that you use the word walls because ultimately that brings up that actually underscores the metaphor of. There's a literal wall between Ely and Oscar,
right.
And
yep.
they traverse that distance by code. They have a secret code that they know, and they are able to communicate to each other, even though there is distance between them. Where at the same time, you've got a Oscar being unwilling or unable to communicate to his mother what's going on in his life.
Right.
You know, he lies to her. You know, he's got the cut on his cheek and he says, you know, oh, I fell down. Rather than tell his mother he's being bullied at school. You know, the idea that both of these two are either unwilling or unable to communicate to anybody, and then but they're able to communicate to each other in code. They only understand one another.
I will say it is just, there's just something so magical about, you know, meeting somebody and you just instantly know how to communicate with them and you both communicate well.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're both on the absolutely on the same wavelength like that. And I think that's what that is for them. They are absolutely 100% in tune with one another and they know just how to communicate to one another. They really understand what the other person is going through, or they understand where they're coming from. And it's beautiful, I think. And I just, their Morse code through the wall has always got me, because I think that's just so sweet and just absolutely just precious.
Yeah. Yeah, and it means a lot more now that I'm rethinking this movie from this other perspective. It means a lot more than I thought it did, you know, which is also extraordinary. But yeah, in that respect, I mean, like, and I'm rethinking a whole bunch of scenes now, like, Ellie kind of coming into the apartment without being invited.
Mm-hmm.
And Oscar's response to be genuine concern and then runs and hugs her. You know, it's now that I'm rethinking it from this new context, I'm like, well, that scene was actually really quite poignant and not, you know, the manipulative, you know, look what you've made me do. You know, it's because that's it, my entire view of this film is being altered as we're talking,
because it almost feels like she wants him to run in a way. Like,
yes.
Here's this gross, awful part of me. What is wrong with you? And then he hugs her.
Right.
And it's like, no, you're not gross. You're not awful. You're not a monster. I love you regardless.
Right. Yeah. And also just the little things that she does to make him feel better. Like, you know, he mentioned she smells bad at the beginning. And then she's next time she sees him, she's like, do I still smell bad? And he's like, no, she like took the time to try to make herself not smell bad. These little things that are, I'm rethinking, entirely now. It's interesting that I had such a different read on it, and now I'm having it completely rearranged. It's fascinating. I don't know, Sam, what about you? What do you got? What were you wanted to talk about?
Well, I mean, we talked a lot about, you know, Ellie's humanity and, you know, how that's kind of, you know, budding when she's, you know, also, you know, a super predator. What else I had was just like, what do you think about the subplot of you know, the drinking buddy going to you know, avenge God, what is that character's name?
Locke.
Yeah,
was one of them. I think he was the one that was killed first,
right?
And then Jacques is killed.
Yeah, Lack. Yes.
Lack is the one is the one who is.
I don't know why I can't get these ones straight. You know, there's Locke and Jacques and
yeah, no, Durgan, they're all
Flurgan,
yeah.
and Durgan.
Yep. Swedish chef there.
Yes.
Pork.
How do you feel that goes into the movie, and what do you think that changes as far as how you feel about the film in general?
What do you think, Jamie? We may have lost you.
I always kind of viewed it as like a almost like, hey, here's these actual human people. Right. And here's what they're doing, but also it feels very like old school horror, like with how in Universal Frankenstein, like
Right.
you have the townspeople, and like
Mm-hmm.
you
Right.
there's always going to be some opposition or some misunderstanding of vampires or whatever monster, because they represent larger society.
Right.
Yeah. I wonder now that I'm thinking about it, I think there's something to the idea of the connection between Lack and the little shit there, the bully, kid bully.
Right. Connie
That
or whatever.
yeah, that the world around these two characters is basically just filled with boorish bullies who
Right.
will stop at nothing to threaten their way of life simply because they're different.
Yep.
Because Lack is not exactly nice to other people in the
No.
narrative. To the point that actually the reason why the woman is turned into a vampire is because she has a fight with Lack.
Right.
As
Yeah.
she basically, as she basically, after he had basically said, "My best friend's dead and now I have nothing," and she's like, "Well, there's me." And he's
Right.
like, "You suck." Like, you know.
Yeah, right.
And then she walks off, storms off, and then she gets attacked. She becomes she becomes she just wanders into the wrong place at the wrong time when
Right.
Ellie is starving and just lands on her. Whoever was coming up those steps was the victim. That was it. It happened to be her because she was in the middle of a fight with Lack. I wonder, I'm now kind of thinking in the sense of, you've got two aggressive male figures that both threaten one of each, that in some ways Lack is just the. I was thinking, you know what movie I was thinking of? I don't know if you guys have seen this one, Eden Lake.
Yeah.
You've seen Eden
Yes.
Lake.
Yes.
Where the entire point of that movie is like, you know, once the heroine gets to like the adults are just as bad, if not
Right.
worse.
Yes. Oh, God.
I thought Eden Lake was brilliant, but I'm never gonna watch it again. But yeah, it was one of the hardest viewing, but also one of the funniest, because I remember watching that movie with some friends, thinking we were gonna just have a good time. And we're watching it, and as we're getting there, I at one point looked at the
And
time and
you're
went,
horrified.
yeah, I
Right.
looked at the time and went, realized there was about 15 minutes left. And I'm like, and we're not really anywhere near a resolution. I'm like, guys, I don't think we're gonna get a happy ending.
Right.
And then sure enough, we all ended with like just movie ended, and we just sat there like, yeah, we're all miserable now. But yeah, I think because we were really hoping there would be some sort of positive resolution of that film.
Right.
But
Yeah, because Kelly Riley is like infinitely likable, and she
yeah.
makes such a good main character in anything. And like, you just want her to be like this badass final girl. And
Right.
oh, God,
She
you don't get
only successfully kills the mildly innocent kids.
it.
But that's what I was thinking about a lot actually while watching this film, in the sense of both of these two characters, Lack and the kid bully, have sidekicks that don't want anything to really do with it. They're
Right.
forced into it. But also just that connection between you've got a young person and then an adult counterpart, who's also kind of the same,
Right.
that you realize what we're kind of talking about is that no matter that, and again, now that I'm thinking about it from this other perspective of the healing journey, is like
Right.
yet another hurdle of the fact the world will never accept us as we are.
No, yeah,
You as a kid are dealing with these shitheads. I, as a immortal vampire, are dealing with these shitheads. No matter
right,
where we go, there will be
it's always
shitheads.
shitheads,
Yeah, and these shitheads will prey on us. They
right,
will bully us. They will try to harm us.
but they have each other,
But they have
and
each other
that
now.
makes it better,
Yeah.
it does,
Well, because
and
Ellie can rip their heads off, quite
right.
literally rip their
Yeah,
heads off. Yeah.
and she will.
She has no moral compunction to do otherwise.
Right.
Um, but no, I do
It's
like I do like that
also
Oscar,
ironic that like lack of, you know, approaches the problems with, you know, like a middle school age mindset as well. Like he doesn't try to get involved, the cops involved or anything like that. He goes over there with a penknife, you know, and just thinks he's gonna solve the problem himself.
Right. Yeah,
because
no, you're
he
right.
Thinks,
yeah.
Because he thinks he can solve the problem. He's filled
right.
with just some sort of just toxic male patriarchal bravado
right.
bullshit. And there we are.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's very true.
And this whole movie kind of really rips apart patriarchal nonsense and like masculinity nonsense as well,
right.
because it's like Oscar doesn't conform to what the idea of, like, you know, normal healthy boy masculinity, and
right.
he's targeted for it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, and then also in the sense of challenging patriarchy, I mean, I think that we get the yeah. idea that Ellie's going to be kind of in charge too of that relationship,
right.
but yeah,
yeah,
like, you know, right. but yeah, he's but I like the idea of, like, there's this running undercurrent throughout the film as well of, but yeah, it's an interesting dichotomy anyway to have the
right.
The kid and the adult have that connection. I liked that the bullying in this film feels excessive but not unrealistic.
Right.
I know I've been in situations with bullies where I thought my life was actually in danger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bullies are excessive. I will say this. I'm like, anybody that has been bullied can literally sit back and tell you they are excessive. They are that just relentless.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's
oh,
nice
sure.
to see them all get torn apart. But
right.
Well, the Schadenfreude that you get from that the end of that movie, like, I think that added 10 years to my life. As
I meant to go back
yeah.
and I meant to go right. back and rewatch it a little bit again, but the does she leave the little blonde boy alive?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Because I think I saw him move
right.
briefly at the end of it. So I was like, oh, she let that one live, but it's because
he wasn't doing anything. Yeah.
He wasn't really doing anything and didn't want to be there.
Right.
But yeah, as we mentioned earlier, I do like the stick scene too.
Yes.
Even though it's an alarming scene,
right.
That Oscar is just going to whack him upside the head with a stick, and does serious damage. I did want to point out there was one other element. There's one adult that's sort of in the middle of all of this,
mm-hmm.
That I think it's the teacher,
right.
who
yes.
seems who seems to take a little interest in Oscar and wants to help him. But so he's an interesting character to kind of get dropped in the middle of all this, because he doesn't really have an arc or
right.
anything particular about him, but he doesn't fit into our thesis on the way adults versus children are contrasted in this
right.
narrative. So what do you guys make of the teacher? Jamie, what do you make of the teacher? You're a teacher yourself. So.
Well, I mean, like, I feel like to an extent at that age, teachers, we kind of at that point bridge a gap between, you know, since it's obviously middle grades, there's kind of that gap between adulthood-ish, like teenagerdom, and like you, like, there's still a wall, but there's not as much of a wall there at that time. I think from teaching like college and you're getting like new adults, it sometimes depends on the kid and the situation. Like, some of y'all are like, they do have walls, but they're really easy to break down, and some you have to work on. But I think as a teacher, sometimes it's easier for them to communicate with me about their issues than it is for anyone else in their life. So.
Right.
Right.
And so, yeah, this particular teacher is, I mean, do we think he's taking an interest in Oscar? I mean, like, and what that interest is, or like, is it potentially harmful? Is it, or, you know, he seems to genuinely kind of care, but at the same time, he's sort of a disciplinarian.
Mm-hmm.
He's interesting. And I never noticed him before, really, watching this film prior. Watching it this time, though, I was like, this guy's interesting. I don't know what's going on with him. But there is that notion of he watches the stick scene happen from a distance, and he doesn't intervene. He wants to see what's going to happen.
I had some teachers like that, that like knew my background and like stuff that had happened to me, and they would let me take care of myself and just turn, they would just turn away from it. They would be like, I'm not going to say anything. And like one of them told my mom, she said, I know she can handle herself. And I heard the whole thing.
Right.
And I let her do it. Yeah. I was like, okay.
Well, I was gonna say, even the teacher that does come up to take care of the bully doesn't say anything to Oscar. She doesn't like chastise him, or because you would think, and I would assume a modern American movie would have the teachers kind of blame Oscar, kind of like the Carrie situation.
Yeah.
Like the teachers are like, you know, we understand that you were actually the one being bullied, but it's still somehow your fault.
Yeah.
I've had that too.
Yeah.
I've had all kinds of weird experiences with school administration and teachers as a as a kid. So I've also had the, well, that's your fault. You were defending yourself, but somehow that's your fault.
Right. Yeah, you're still responsible for the outcome, even though all you were doing was defending yourself. But it's interesting to note that they don't like, and they don't seem to call Oscar's mom. You know, it's interesting that, I guess it's just sort of like lumped into the adults are fairly useless, when it comes to this type of narrative or this type of experience for a young person. That only another young person can actually get, and the adults are incapable of being of much use.
I also think there's that disconnect because they're adults that were probably very different children.
Right.
Because I'll say that because a lot of my students will come talk to me because they realize that I've been through some stuff, and they know they can talk to me about these things.
Yeah.
I think that like that disconnect is like, there's no common ground at all.
Right. Yeah.
There's no empathy or understanding or anything.
Right.
Yeah. These adults may not be able to identify with these young people because they haven't gone through it. And the teachers in this particular case, he's a little on the nerdy side. So maybe he does. Maybe that's why what's driving it is maybe he's like, oh, yeah, I went through that. But he still doesn't seem to be particularly sure how to approach Oscar. But at the same time, in his defense, Oscar's a little bit of an odd duck. Right. Yeah. Like Oscar is an odd kid that it probably that. And he's not forthcoming with information. You know, they take his pants and they pee on it in the and instead of telling anybody that he doesn't have any pants, he just walks home without pants.
That just kind of sends a message to me that in the past no one did any. If he said something, no one did anything, because that I kind of got to that point myself, and I think that's where I really identified with him. If I even told them, nothing happened, and to the point something really bad happened to me at one point. What it was, it doesn't really matter.
Sure.
But the principal looked at me and said, "Why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you tell anyone?" And I looked at him and I said, "You weren't going to do anything."
Right. All that does is make it worse, you know?
Usually, yeah.
It's a, yeah. Yeah, so I think that's part of the problem there.
Yeah. But also, like, the way Oscar approaches these things too, like, they're whacking him with a switch at one point, and he just sort of takes it and won't, he doesn't flinch. He doesn't, like, there's like this weird moment of almost like maybe he's almost enjoying it. Like, it's this weird, Oscar is this, is having these very strange emotional responses to what's being thrown at him that, is only going to make it, make him more alienated. And I think that's just, that's interesting. But again, it's like, but again, what we're talking about in the sense of connecting, him and Ellie having a healing relationship in which they are becoming whole. It's again, he doesn't want them to see him. Like, there's this lack of perception. He doesn't want anyone to see what he is. And that he can only show vulnerability to Ellie. At the same time, there is a I think Oscar, to a degree, has a certain attraction to the, to a world of violence, or like, there's some warning signs at any rate, some red flags, I think, that I think if I were an educator myself, I might be like, I don't know, is this kid a bullied loner, or is this kid gonna, like, stab somebody? But
I mean, honestly, at this point, I wouldn't fault him if he stabbed somebody.
But what
I
I,
mean, you can't, yeah, he, like, that's the thing, though, like, a lot of educators don't really, a lot of them, in my experience, wouldn't take the time to give a damn until, like, somebody was stabbed. And then it's, well, that one was always a weird one. And you had the power to do something.
But part of those red flags I might be talking about, though, with him is, could also just be, remnants of my original read that Ellie was sort of picking him to be the new familiar because he was a burgeoning sociopath in and of himself. But when approaching it from the new di from this other direction, that seems less likely. That he's not really a budding sociopath. He's actually just a troubled kid who has to figure things out. Because it is in the crucial climax, really, when Lack is about to try and kill Ellie. He thinks about stabbing him. Oscar pulls out the knife, but ultimately he realizes he can't do it. He can't stab another person, so he yells out, and instead that wakes Ellie up, who's able to, tear the guy apart, and then just Oscar shuts the door. That in that he's still involved in the violence of that sequence, but he's not able to instigate it himself. So I mean, there is that, that maybe, that any red flags that may have been there at the beginning of the narrative are actually, as odd as it is, are actually becoming white flags. Like, they're no longer dangerous as much, because actually Ellie is going to be the dangerous one. But he's, so there is that, that trajectory that, like, what might have been a budding sociopath is becoming more of a sensitive young man as a result of this positive relationship he's having, rather than all the negative ones. Which is interesting. But yeah, does anybody have anything else they wanted to discuss, particularly about Let the Right One In?
No, I think we covered everything that I had.
Yeah. Jamie, anything you wanted to jump on?
No, I think that I've hit the nail on the head for me.
Yeah. I think you did for me too. I've completely rethought my entire approach to this picture, and
Pretty
that's pretty
cool.
special. Yeah. I feel pretty good about that. Yeah, so this movie is far more of an actual love story than I thought it was. I thought it was sort of I always looked at it as a subversion of a love story.
It is a fucked up love
Love
story,
story.
but it
It is
is
that.
a love story.
Yeah.
And Those are my favorite. Those are my favorite to this day, over 15 years later.
Yeah. Is it that old already? Yeah, I guess it is. Yeah. Yeah, I remember this was a new horror film. But yeah. Yeah.
Well, JB,
Jamie, did you have anything you wanted to plug?
Oh, well, we're hard at work on Your Husband Was a Good Man right now. We're in the middle of casting and all that. So basically, if you're the praying sort or you want to send us good vibes or a miracle, yes, I'd appreciate it. Light a candle for us. Good vibes. We're working on that. And we're shooting next month. So I'm excited, and that's what we're working on right now over here.
Nice.
Well, it's very exciting. Yeah. And is that going to be a feature or is that going to be a short?
This is a short. This is a
Okay.
short. This is a proof of concept. I've been developing the feature slowly, and I will eventually completely write that. But it's been really fun to explore these characters and go deeper into the story because the short is messed up, but the feature is probably even more messed up because I had ideas that, would not fit into a
Right.
short. So
Sure. Sure.
it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to see some people's reactions because there's one part that even in writing creeped out a lot of people. And I cannot wait to see it. I can't wait to see it. Like,
Very cool.
absolutely, yes.
Right.
Yep. Well, you got plenty of good vibes coming off from this end. So,
Thank
yes. Yeah.
you.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming back on, and Jamie. It's always great to have
Yeah.
you.
Well, lovely to
I
talk
love
to you.
it.
I love it. This was amazing.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. All right. Well, Sam, do you want to take us out?
Yep. Thank you guys for listening.
I'm about to eat.
We really appreciate your listenership. Watch out for each other. It's a weird world out there. But I'd like to remind you, as always, to be kind, rewind, but mostly be kind. Thanks.
Oh, thank you, devil. Thank you, devil.